there is a place where time stands still. Where nature is harsh and demanding. Where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my life.
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
The glass is made of yards of ivory chest. It has big sleeves with.
Card number?
You take out a lot of videos.
You want to go out with me?
My name is Pim. This is Freddie Graves. We're in moving pictures.
Picture show man. Picture show man. We want to see the thing we've never seen. All shining on the silver screen. Oh,
video drama.
Picture show man. Turn off the lights and drive our cares away.
You are listening to a special May Day episode of Showreel, with a spotlight on local films that have focused on industrial action, and of course, we're also wanting to examine the film industry as a workplace. Now, I'll be your presenter today, Jacob Anjouafa, and some of you may remember me from the Green Left Radio Friday Breakfast program. Now, before I start, I'd like to acknowledge that 3CR today is being broadcast to you from the Wurundjeri land of the Kulin Nation. I'd like to acknowledge that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land, and that sovereignty has never been ceded. And that 3CR pays its respects to First Nations elders past, present and emerging, and acknowledge that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land, and that sovereignty has never been ceded. This land was stolen, and 3CR is committed to supporting the fight back of First Nations people. Now, to kind of start off, so for our half an hour program this for May Day, we're going to be featuring a bit of an interview with Zebedee Parks, who's actually a grassroots kind of filmmaker based in Sydney. We have quite a good discussion with him, kind of looking at, the kind of struggles of what it is like to work as a filmmaker, and also the kind of precarious kind of nature of the work. But before we get into that, I want to kind of give a bit of a kind of opening kind of segment that kind of focuses, that gives a bit of a spotlight to a number of films that deal with industrial action and also highlight, you know, the many inspiring stories of workers' struggle. So one documentary I guess I want to kind of highlight, and this is one that I'm not sure if you're going to be able to see, but of course I think the Green Left team might actually look at organising a screening, or potentially 3CR themselves might try and do a fundraiser screening of this. But there is a documentary that is, quite very good, which was titled Radical Wollongong. Now, I remember seeing this documentary when it was first released in 2014. And one of the incredible parts about this kind of documentary is Wollongong is one of those kind of, you know, cities that has, you know, it has a lot of history. There's a lot of, there's a whole history of industrial struggle and radical campaigns, you know, being a port kind of city. So one of the kind of amazing things about this film is the film covers many kind of important campaigns that fought for progressive change in Wollongong over the past century. It covers the infamous DAFRAM dispute that earned the Prime Minister Robert Menzies the nickname the Big Orin Bob. You had local draft resistors opposing the Vietnam War, and then you also had the fight to get women jobs at the Port Kembla Steelworks owned by BHP in the 1980s. In fact, that's actually a subject of another film that I'm going to recommend soon. And I guess one of the amazing things about the film is that, you know, the film featured interviews with participants of their campaigns, and their stories were brought to life with archival footage and photos from strikes, community rallies, coal mine work-ins, and parliament occupations. And of course, the film writer John Radford, who had sadly has passed away in a number of years ago, you know, said about the film that Wollongong has a radical activist history that challenges anywhere else in the country. And I think he stated that the film shows how Wollongong's radical legacies live on in today's struggles, and it is a call for the spirit of people power to continue and grow. Now, the other documentary I kind of want to highlight is How the West Was Lost. Now, my team at Green Left, we actually recently did a fundraiser screening of this documentary just around Invasion Day. And this was a 1987 documentary that captures the incredible Pilbara strike that happened on May 1st, 1946. Now, this strike involved more than 800 Aboriginal station workers who walked off sheep stations in the northwest of Western Australia. Now, this marked the kind of beginning of a, you know, carefully organised strike that was to last at least 3 years, but never officially ended. The strike was more than a demand for better wages and conditions. It was in the words of Keith Connolly in the Melbourne Herald, a well-considered statement by grievously exploited people standing up for their rights and their dignity. So yeah, this is a documentary that you can actually, it's quite easily accessible. So if you search How the West Was Lost, you can actually access it on a number of sites. It's also, if you have a library card, it is shown on Canopy, which is a kind of streaming service that's a bit like Netflix, but it's for local libraries and it's free of charge. So I definitely recommend for any of our listeners to kind of check out the documentary. And there's actually just been recently a new book published on the Pilbara strike, which has been published by Interventions. So look out for that book as well, because, you know, I think there's, for left-wing people and workers kind of day, I think there's so much to be kind of learned from the Pilbara strike. And it is one of the most incredible moments in, I think, in so-called Australia's kind of history of industrial struggle. Now, the last documentary, I guess, I kind of want to highlight, and we'll play the trailer of the documentary after this. But this is a documentary titled Woman of Steel. Now, this struggle was kind of mentioned because it's actually covered partially in Radical Wollongong. But this is an incredible Australian documentary that follows a group of determined local women in their 13-year fight for the right to work in Wollongong steel industry. Now, this was directed by Robin Murphy, who was one of the leaders of the Wollongong's 1980 to 1994 Jobs for Women campaign. And this joined hundreds of migrant/working-class women to take on Australia's most powerful company, BHP. And initially, they seemed to have won. But when the 1983 steel slump devastated the city's economy, the women were forced into the courtroom and onto the streets to face a prolonged battle for equality. And I guess this struggle played against a background of societal change. And I think, you know, this is just, you know, having read there's also a book about this strike, this struggle published by Resistance Books titled Woman of Steel, and you can pick it up at the Resistance Bookshop. But yeah, I think this is just an incredible kind of documentary that really highlights, you know, the kind of links between women's liberation and industrial action and workers' rights. Because often, you know, things like workers' rights and feminism are often contraposed. But really, this is an example of a bit of industrial history that really shows the kind of links. And of course, this documentary was actually managed to break out a bit more into the mainstream compared to the previous two documentaries I talked about. So it was actually shown at the Sydney International Film Festival. And it was also shown on ABC iView. So this is a documentary that you can actually that is quite easy to access. And if you search Woman in Steel on Google, you should be able to get access to it. But yeah, I'll just quickly finish up here and listeners can listen to the Woman of Steel trailer to get a bit of a taste of the film. You're listening to Showreel on 3CR 855 AM.
A lot of these jobs in BHP surely would be very difficult grimy, noisy, dirty jobs? I mean, do women in Port Kembla really want these jobs?
Tents, banners and petitions presented an unfamiliar sight to steelworkers at Australian Iron and Steel today. The group is planning to file the first class action suit Australia has ever seen against the steelworks company.
It's a crazy. You're not going to beat BHP.
Were you one of those women in the tents?
Well, one I nearly threw off the bridge because he was being very cheeky.
When I looked the paper, job for women.
Women especially, they are good fighters.
No, wrong. They said people waiting long time, how many years?
But all these people have got the same type of face. I'm sure if you went in among there, half of them wouldn't know how to speak English.
We organised. We marched.
I want a job and I want to work. I have family.
We went to court. The company spent up big. BHP delayed and stalled.
One judge has referred to it as being as significant as the basic wage case.
If people get together, we can be strong. You can achieve a lot.
If it takes another 13 years, we'll be here.
You are listening to Showreel for our special May Day program. This May Day episode of Showreel is putting the spotlight on local film with a focus on industrial action and the film industry as a workplace. And in regards to this whole theme of the film industry as a workplace, I'm very happy to be joined today by Zebedee Parks, who is a documentary filmmaker with a passion for social justice and environment causes. Zebedee Parks has, you know, done a lot of, has worked on a number of kind of grassroots documentary productions. He also regularly does photography for a whole range of protests, including for climate, justice, housing justice, and Palestine. And Zeb also has experience with creating films with not-for-profits, ethical business and advocacy organisations, musicians and artists. And of course, part of his kind of work has obviously been trying to use, you know, the work that he does for the making this to help, you know, to help reach new people, educate, fundraise and build campaigns. Good afternoon. Good morning, Zeb. Actually, this is going to be a pre-recording, so I don't think it really matters. this interview is recorded in the evening. So Zeb, I guess I wanted to kind of start off by kind of saying, asking about, because one of the challenges of being a filmmaker, especially a grassroots kind of filmmaker that's not really necessarily part of the mainstream, is often a lot of working class artists like yourself often kind of struggle to kind of make ends meet, especially in terms of securing any kind of secure kind of work. And I guess I want to kind of hear, I guess, a bit about some of your reflections, I guess, on the precarity of working in the film industry.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here, Jacob. I guess I have a few experiences of mine, both in a broad sense and in a sort of my specific stories. It's definitely quite difficult to find any work in the film industry at the moment, and that's something that I know I'm having struggles with, but also having just finished the Masters at the Australian Film School, a number of people that I also did it with are struggling to find work within the film industry as such. So on one hand, there's difficulties in that sense, which has always existed, but from what I'm hearing is it's become harder now than it used to be, and less entry-level sort of pathways through, especially for people from working-class backgrounds. Another thing is, so a lot of filmmakers now, and it sort of happens across a lot of creative industries, are looking for work outside of the film industry and then trying to use that to survive whilst pursuing passion projects on the side or trying to make them the main thing in the future. And part of the problem with that now is it's just harder to find work full stop. As the economy is becoming harder and harder to find work and cost of living is increasing, it's harder to live off like a sort of smaller part-time job in the way that some people used to be able to sort of scrape together a bit of money through that to then survive and then work on the films they wanted to work on. I mean, another thing the industry is obviously talking about is AI and how a lot of production companies, like a lot of industries, are trying to find ways of cutting workers out. So for instance, like what used to be entry-level positions at a documentary company might have been transcribing, which is now you can do through AI programs, which is a lot easier when working on your own independent films, but it does make it harder to find entry-level jobs, and that's not been replaced with other positions. I mean, for myself, it's also difficult to get funding, difficult to find work within any major production companies. A lot of the major streamers are focusing more on acquiring production, so after you finish the production and then buying it, often for a lot less than it would cost to make the production, which is sort of putting a lot of pressure on filmmakers to basically produce films for free or very little money and then hope to sell it. And One in a Blue Moon might sell for a few million dollars at a major film festival. That's becoming both rare and rarer, and also the exceptions, even if they like to talk about them as a rule.
So I kind of wonder also, I wanted to kind of hear, I guess you've just did a Masters of Film and you've had some experience directing a number of documentaries about campaigns and a whole range of courses, including refugee rights. But I guess I want to kind of hear your experiences in terms of attempting to produce a kind of documentary of your own, and what are some of the barriers that you have faced that a more bigger budget production would not face.
I guess for me, everything I've done has been voluntarily made. So, I mean, whilst you're at film school, you can sort of work with other collaborators there and you're all working from a sort of voluntary space. So that works to some extent. But when I've made films outside of there, it's often you don't have the money to pay people. So, for instance, you can't hire people to do composing or be another second camera operator with you or any other number of roles. And so you're sort of working within either doing it all yourself or trying to get people to do it for free, which sometimes people want to collaborate on a project and you all want to do that voluntarily, and that's fine. But also if someone like me, you are trying to build an industry and you're wanting to work with people that are also wanting to work in this industry and you want to be paying them, and then if you can't get the funding, then you can't pay people, and then that will have a negative impact on quality. Another way that for me that definitely impacts a lot of the documentary work that I do is that it takes a lot of time. And if you're going out and spending a lot of time filming someone, especially if you're making longer form observational documentaries, you need to be able to have the capacity to do that. And then that's difficult if you can't get any funding and you're having to work other jobs and they have to take priority in your life. It's then harder to go out and spend the time you need to building relationships with people in communities, filming what's going on, getting to the actions, getting to the other events.
Yeah. And can you tell us a bit about some of the experiences that you have had? Like, I guess in terms of like, especially for our listeners, you've made a number of documentaries, including My Friend in Detention. And I guess one of the strengths, I've actually personally seen this documentary, and I guess one of the strengths about this documentary was it very much highlighted the experiences of grassroots campaigns, but also highlighted, you know, the type of voices that tend to not make the kind of mainstream, which is actually something at 3CR Community Radio we're very much interested in. You know, we're very much interested in hearing, you know, from the voices that I guess are often kind of marginalized in the mainstream. So I want to kind of hear about some of your experiences making, you know, a number of grassroots documentaries, and I guess, you know, the kind of value that they kind of reveal in terms of art.
Yeah, I mean, For My Friends in Detention was a great experience making that film, and that film partly came out of being involved in the refugee campaign while in Western Australia and seeing the impact that people protesting outside detention was having on people in detention, and then sort of vice versa, people who were protesting, seeing what impact that made on people who were in detention and then using that to fuel themselves to continue protesting. And that really was about sort of solidarity. I mean, another refugee film on the same vein that I made recently that's on Dogplay is called Last Goal Wins. And so it sort of came out of the idea of looking at a number of Tamil refugees and others that have visas and some don't have visas in Australia, and a lot have been living here for more than 10 years. And then I came across through sort of activism within the sort of Tamil Refugee Council in Sydney, a couple of guys, one had got his permanent residency visa and was able to bring his partner over and his child and sort of set up a family and really kind of begin his life in that way, where another guy, and they were best mates, and had been able to get the visa and is still living in limbo. And so it was kind of looking at their story and then also how they use football as a way of both something that they love, but then also it sort of brought the community together and showing how and supported each other and the positive benefits, but then also how you can have people very similar stories, and by arbitrary reasons, one gets a visa and one doesn't, and the impact that can have on their lives from bringing family over. The interesting thing was, I made that film a couple of years ago, and then like sort of 5 or 6 months later into the next year, then we start having the protests outside immigration offices around the country by various refugee organizations. In Sydney, you had a lot of like Tamil refugees, Bangladeshi refugees, Iranian refugees, and a few others. And this was outside Tony Burke's office. I went there and started involved with the community there and making films there. And it was interesting because I rock up there and then there's people that knew me from the film that I'd made the previous year and were like really keen to have me there and film me and documenting what was happening because they'd seen, I guess, some of their stories and liked the way that someone was trying to tell their stories to a wider audience in the film that I made before. So that would be one nice example of just the importance of going out there and building relationships with people. Like for me, it comes from actually just spending a lot of time sitting and talking with people and going to protests and supporting people's protests and doing photography and video and allowing them to use that footage and then sort of through there developing stories of different things that you sort of observe and see and then trying to tell them to a broader audience and using, I guess, the idea of film as a way of trying to explain what's happening and sort of people whose voices have been preferably unheard of, to sort of paraphrase Aaron Daddy Roy, in Australian society.
So we've had a bit of a chat about, you know, some of the kind of issues that affect working as an artist and a filmmaker in Australia. We've also talked about some of the challenges in terms of making kind of grassroots sort of filmmaking. But we've also talked about obviously some of the positives, like, you know, the fact that your film's very much connected to activist kind of campaigning and very much sort of made the, you know, told a kind of story that, you know, you don't kind of see in the mainstream, but also very much kind of came off as like very much was something that was very much grassroots. In fact, I actually just watched the documentary recently, Palestinians Don't Need Sidewalks, which actually has some of your footage that's utilized. And probably one of the inspiring things about watching that documentary was, as someone who's sort of active in the Palestine movement, you get to kind of see a lot of familiar faces. So, you know, it actually feels like it's an attempt of the community to actually tell our kind of own stories. The next question I kind of want to ask and kind of open also up for final comments after this is, you know, in terms of like being a filmmaker in Australian kind of capitalism, you know, what are some of the reforms or things that could be done to actually ensure, you know, that artists like yourself can actually be properly compensated for the work you do, and, you know, the idea of actually artists being able to have a living wage? Because I guess just a bit of a broader comment here, I mean, one of the things about the nature of art under capitalism is that, you know, it tends to be that the well-off people, you know, people from more middle-class backgrounds are more in a position to become, you know, the next Quentin Tarantino or something in terms of filmmaking, you know, whereas working class people like yourself are generally, it's generally much harder to kind of break into the film industry or even to just make a living doing film. Like, you know, I have a number of friends who have done film degrees and have not really been able to find kind of secure work. So I guess I want to hear your comments, Seb, in terms of, you know, what could be done to actually improve the situation for artists and filmmakers in Australia, especially working class artists like yourself.
Yeah, this is a really important point, especially about working class artists. Like, if you go through and look at a lot of Australian filmmakers that have made documentaries in the last few years and got any form of funding or distribution, and sort of look where their parents own houses, and they're often in major cities and they can sort of live with their parents for free and use that for a number of years while they sort of basically make their first film for free. Because if you look at the Australian industry, when you're trying to get funding, you almost need to have made one film and had moderate success of that, like at the feature level, and then have spent a couple of years developing another film before you're even in the conversation for funding, which locks out a lot of working class people that need to work other jobs to survive. In terms of some ideas of what we can do, I mean, a lot of film unions are arguing for like quotas on major streamers like Netflix and Amazon and so forth that are operating within Australia and making a lot of money from Australian audiences, and none of that money is necessarily going back to Australian filmmakers and film productions. Like, I was off at AIDC, Australia's major documentary conference, and people sort of pitching projects there, and they had different people from different broadcasters. But you look at sort of like Netflix, Amazon, Disney, none of these people are even attending these conferences or looking to really invest in local industries. So one campaign, a number of the screen unions Australia running us for quotas on content. I mean, what I would say if you had that though, that then it needs to be gone definitely to documentaries, to grassroots documentaries, and sort of spaces for emerging filmmakers without the initial credits to be getting funding, as opposed to sort of going to people that are already established or just on sports broadcasts, which is how people have used quotas in the past. And I mean, sort of more than that, it would be say entry-level positions, and actually having entry-level positions that are targeted at people from working class communities to be able to come in and apply for them. Another thing to look at is, I mean, there's some countries, like I think Belgium has, you can almost get a stipend or an allowance if you're an artist and you sort of got a body of work and you can apply for that from the government and get it. So if we had something like that, which you see some artist residencies, but they're very few and far between and often not targeted at working class communities. So for me, somewhere that would be good. More like micro funding pots that are easily accessible would be really good for people working, producing their first film. And then even things like, it's interesting, we look in the sort of 70s and 80s when Australia had a more of a booming independent documentary scene and there was more funding, there was more opportunities for things like ABC and SBS that don't exist anymore. There's also funding for like film cooperatives. And so actually going back to where we're funding almost film production hubs or film cooperatives that people can then get equipment out of, use, make films, get a small allowance to make films and things like that. So at the moment, if you look in the Australian industry, a lot of the funding is either, there's a greater push for it to be philanthropic funding, which for some people can work quite well, but there's an obvious issue there, which is rich people are then kind of deciding what films get made and they may benefit rich people. Then you've got sort of government and screen industry grants, but that's becoming both competitive, more and more competitive to get and needing a greater level of development to get. But also there seems to be more interest in funding US productions in Australia than actually Australian productions, because I guess they want to boost tourism or something along those lines. So yeah, ways that we can just have more grants targeted at people from working class communities in so-called Australia, and funding for things like film production co-ops would be really good. And then forcing the streamers that are making money, that some of that money actually goes back into funding Australian filmmakers.
Well, thanks for that, Seb. I think that is actually a kind of really good summary. And I guess I'll give you an opportunity to make any final comments you might like to make for our program, but also how people can actually see some of your work.
Yeah, if you go to my website, zebedeeparks.com, you can see a number of my films there. So I'd encourage people to check some of the stuff out. I've also got a couple of other films sort of hopefully getting into festivals, so keep an eye out for them. I guess to sort of finish off with, it's like one of the things I think that's really important with sort of activist sort of filmmaking is, on the one hand, it can be a very powerful way that we can tell our stories and express ourselves, and that we need to be creating our own archive as we're going, because a lot of times when, you know, a movement wins, they like to say, oh, it was inevitable, it just won. Where a real film that can sort of actually visually show the process that went into winning a movement, you can actually show to people that every little bit that we're all doing can actually matter and build up to something. I mean, the other thing I'd say is even the process of making a film can be an act of protest within Australia if you're making stories that people don't want to get heard and voices that people don't want to get out there, and can actually be an interesting way of connecting with other people, which is one of the real benefits I've had, is that it's been a way for me to engage and connect with communities involved in struggle across the country, and hopefully through documenting different struggles sort of bring them together a little bit as well.
Yeah, so thank you very much, Seb, for being on our program this week. You're listening to the special May Day program of Showreel on 3CR 855 AM, and I hope listeners enjoyed this very informative interview. Thanks again.
Thank you.
CR extends a very happy May Day to workers everywhere, continuing the fight to put people before profit.
Happy May Day!
I hope listeners enjoyed the special May Day program of Showreel. So, I like to hope listeners enjoyed the interview with Zebedee Parks, and also my highlighting of three excellent activist documentaries about industrial struggle that I think everyone who's listening to this program should watch. Now, we're going to wrap up. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to our special yearly May Day special broadcast, and I'd like to kind of note that May Day footage is going to go all the way up to 8 o'clock tonight. But I also kind of want to highlight that there will be a special 3CR 2-hour live outside broadcast from the yearly May Day Sunday event, which is organised by the Melbourne May Day Committee. And so that will be happening from 12 to 2pm on Sunday, May the 4th. So yeah, I hope listeners have enjoyed this program and enjoy the rest of your May Day on Thursday, 1st of May. And enjoy the rest of the great program that 3CR has to offer.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.